Hello and welcome to the Ukulele Portal, your one-stop shop to take your ukulele playing to the next level. My name is Roisin Erskine, I am co-founder of Ukulele Portal and I will be your host through this series of inspirational and uplifting ukulele podcasts. Today we are joined by Tara Maze, founder of the London Ukulele Project, and Elizabeth Pfeiffer, European fingerstyle maestra, self-published author of 3 ukulele books, and performer extraordinaire. So thank you, ladies, for joining us, and welcome.
Okay, so look, let's just go ahead and get started. I just wanted to, first of all, ask you both if you would explain to everyone who's listening how you first got into ukulele.
Who's going first?
I mean, if either of you are moved to speak first on that, then please do.
Elizabeth, take it away.
All right, thank you. Well, I was bike traveling on the west coast of the US, and in every music shop I picked up a uke, and there was sheet music of the Shakespeare of the Kuro stuff, and it's pretty much the only thing I knew back then, really. So I started to practice while my guitar changing weeps, and in every store about four bars, and I memorized them, and in the next store I would, you know, do the next 4 bars, and but by LA I was, like I said, about 2 pages down. So that's how I started, and then I wanted one, and I took one. Yeah.
Amazing. Top tip there, going from store to store, checking through the books and thumbing through for ideas and inspiration. So I love that. Did you say you were traveling, and you just were you not traveling with another instrument already, or?
I was on a bike and I was carrying a kid's guitar.
Okay.
And I didn't really play as often as I thought I'd be playing it. And I left it behind in some, with a couch surfing host. They had a project and they were collecting instruments there, but it was perfect. So I left that behind, and then something was missing. So I had already had kind of set my eye on the youth, so that I can't take 2 instruments on the bike. So
yeah, awesome. For anyone who doesn't know what couch surfing is, this was back in the day when I guess it was cool to just rock up to strangers' houses and crash for the night. But couch surfing is a very a really interesting way to travel. So you go onto this website and you find people in the local area that you're planning to stay in, and you'll find a host or many multiple hosts who will show you around their native part of the world and put you up for the night. And it's a lovely way to actually meet people in different cultures and spend time. So I love that you left a gift there.
Yeah, actually that was a particular kind of couch surfing for bike travels, which is called warm travels. I love to do that back in the day. As you say, it's just amazing. So many good friends all over the world now.
Yeah, that's it, because you do get quite close to people quite quickly, especially where music's concerned, but as well when they're hosting you in their own homes. It's beautiful.
I also loved hosting. Actually, here in Vienna, I used to host quite a lot when I first moved here.
Good to know. Yeah. I will remember that one.
Yeah.
Tara, what about you? How did you get into ukulele?
Well, I've always... You know, my family are Irish, so there's always been music, and I was roped into doing a toddler group, and was sort of travelling around with this very big guitar, and somebody just suggested, why don't you try the ukulele, and it was a pink flying V ukulele.
Awesome.
Yes, amazing. And then my amazing husband bought me a ukulele for our first wedding anniversary, because it's wood, isn't it? So I thought that would be a good gift.
Beautiful.
And it literally sort of changed my life forever. It was, it has been life changing.
Do you mind if I ask how long you've both been involved with playing the ukulele? Involved with the ukulele? It sounds like a romantic relationship, yes, doesn't it? And it kind of is, in a way.
It is. I've been playing, I've been teaching for 8 years now. So, married for 10, so we're coming up to our 10th wedding anniversary.
Yeah, that was back in 2014. That trip. So,
I mean, 10 years is a lifetime in some respects, isn't it, for to be playing one instrument? And Elizabeth, actually, you're playing a much, much shorter time, but you had a proficiency already, I believe, in sort of stringed instruments, is that right?
Yeah, my dark secret. The classical guitar. I love that. It's good fun, but the ukulele and I, we just gelled better.
Love that. Yeah, we just clicked. Yeah.
And it's really nice. It was really nice in the beginning to only make music for myself. That was actually the emotional hook. With it, there was no expectations or no gonna do this or that. And I really try to preserve that feeling now that it's got more, but it's still so much fun, and that's the focus.
Yeah, I love that. Actually, it was quite similar for me as well. The ukulele was very definitely an instrument for myself. I wasn't playing classical or Spanish guitar or anything crazy mad skills like that. But I did play a lot of instruments in a lot of different groups. And actually, for me, the ukulele was very definitely like a self-indulgent thing. You know, it was like a treat for myself. And I just love that. But it's such a personable little instrument, you know. So for anyone who's just joining us, thank you so much for joining in. We did have a bit of a tech fail at the start, so we were being serenaded by Elizabeth just while I was trying to work out what settings I had done or undone in the setup, trying to get this organized. But we're rolling now. For anyone who is in the Zoom room, I'm just turning the cameras off so that you don't appear on the Facebook live stream, but feel free to pop any comments or questions in the chat, and the same for anybody who's watching along on Facebook. So let's just find out then, something I'm particularly interested in, and just leading on from the conversation we were having about how your relationship with your ukulele is a very personal relationship, and I'm sure it is the same for other instruments, but it is a very... I see it as self-care, and I'm sure I'm not on my own in that sense. But sort of what opportunities did you find came out of playing the ukulele, or what sort of milestones for personal growth did you find kind of sort of just arose from the fact that you played such a cute little instrument?
For me, it was confidence building. It was, I'd played the guitar, I'd done gigs with my guitar, but it was just something about the ukulele just gave me that extra bit of confidence, which is what I love about it. And what I've witnessed with, you know, the work that I do is what a great tool it is for confidence building. And
yeah, do you want to speak a wee bit more on that actually, Tara? Because the work that you do is really about sort of reducing isolation, supporting individuals, but also developing a community.
Yeah, so when I met you and Elizabeth at the Grand Northern Ukulele Festival, I was so inspired by that festival and how, you know, it was just so easy to meet people and make friends. And also it was very, you couldn't distinguish who was artist and who was punter, and it was all very, it's just lovely. And I thought, you know, from London, I just thought there wasn't really anything happening down here. And then I'd already, you know, taken an interest in this loneliness epidemic that we're facing in the UK at the moment. And I mean, goodness knows, it's even worse now. But it was, you know, quite a hot topic. So we now have an MP for loneliness, for example, which is the first time that's ever been an issue, because it is a real health problem.
Yeah.
And I think, I don't know whether, you know, I was an only child for a long time, and it's probably like loads of psychology, you know, psychiatrist stuff. But to me, the idea of being lonely is just awful. I can't, you know, I just over-empathize with people that might be experiencing loneliness. And in my experience of teaching, it's been such a good way. It's just such an icebreaker. It's been such a good way of people, you know, they may not have anything else in common, but they have this little instrument that they love. And I started running a class for Age UK Richmond, and the feedback was just lovely, and they all felt more confident, they felt less lonely. And, you know, it's not really about being proficient at it. It was just about meeting, you know, all the health benefits that come from, you know, doing a musical. Research has shown that doing a shared activity, your relationships are going to grow quicker and stronger. And I've really, you know, I witnessed that. So at the end of 2018, I set up the London Ukulele Project with the idea, I called it that because, you know, I hope that one day we could have ukulele projects all over the country. But London is where I live, and it seemed to make sense to keep it manageable and small. But the idea being is to support people to set up ukulele groups or take the ukulele out into their community, and to have ukuleles more in schools. And, you know, another reason, another story, like one of my students was being very badly bullied, and the ukulele was literally changed her life, and she, you know, turned it around, and it gave her some ownership over something. And now she's, oh, you're that cool girl that plays the ukulele. And, you know, and she's, and it's just been so heartwarming. And
That's beautiful. I've got goosebumps.
Yeah. And so I really wanted to kind of do something bigger. So, like I said, it's very new. I say we a lot, but it is generally me on my computer till 2 o'clock in the morning, juggling being a mother and work, you know, teaching, because that's is paying the mortgage at the moment, thankfully. And my husband's a live sound engineer, so he's home at the moment, but is normally away a lot. And so, yeah, but I was lucky enough to get a lottery grant last year, and we set up a youth orchestra, and I was able to donate. I've donated over 200 ukuleles to schools across London. And we also had some amazing workshops with Heidi Swedberg and Daniel Ward. What I love about the ukulele is it's for everybody. It's not just children. My youngest student is 3 years old.
Oh, wow.
My oldest has been 87. So
fantastic.
It really is across all the generations. And the workshops that Heidi and Daniel did were in every setting. We were in a primary school, a secondary school. They did a class for Age UK.
Yeah.
We then did two performances. And it's also making, you know, I want to make events that are places where people feel safe and comfortable to come.
Yeah.
You know, so that they're smaller maybe, or they, if they are feeling isolated, it's somewhere they can come out and be part of something.
Beautiful. I love that. There's so much that I resonate with there. But firstly, to say thank you for mentioning the festivals and just how inspirational they are. And hats off to Gnuff and Mary Agnes Carell, because the guys up there do an absolutely amazing job. But also to all of the ukulele festival organisers, like, you guys do such sterling work. And it's a delight to be a part of such a thing. So yeah, thanks and hats off to all the festival organisers. But absolutely, the things that you say about, you know, all the research that there is about how it actually improves your health. I mean, I don't need to tell anyone how good it feels to be part of a ukulele group, particularly for the singing aspect. But like you say, there's so much credible research about how it's actually so therapeutic in addressing things like trauma in a very non-invasive way. So it actually, as a tool, it starts to teach you how to regulate and self-regulate. And then when you talked about about, you know, being together as a group, that's actually, you know, you're communicating with other people, but you're doing it through the medium of music. So actually the language part isn't relevant so much as the music and the ethos and the vibe as such. You know, it's hard to quantify what that is, but everybody feels it and nobody doubts it, and I absolutely love that.
One of the things I organised was a mass busk at Waterloo Station, and it was just so nice because there were groups of people that had come. We ended up with 120 from all over London, but people came up from Kent, and there were sort of groups of people, but then there were people, there was a guy there from Japan who was on his own, and he just happened to see on Facebook it was happening, and he just thought, what a great way of meeting, or, you know, just being with people. But he was here on an exchange, and then there was another lady, and she'd come along, she hadn't been able to find a group. You know, so one of the things we have on the website is a directory, so you can put in your postcode and find your nearest ukulele group. And
oh, fab, that's a great idea.
And we, you know, and I want, we're working on a resource and to try and support people to run their own classes, you know, to support teachers. And when I went into the schools, there are so many teachers have said, you know, I had a horrible experience when I was, you know, being taught music. And
yeah,
I do think that our generation are looking at it differently. We are looking at it more from a therapeutic angle.
For sure.
And so the resource is there to hopefully to help them. But also I want to support artists, you know, talented people like Elizabeth. You know, I want to pay her to do these commission, you know, these arrangements, and because her time is valuable and it's worth being paid for. So hopefully, you know, if people support the project, then I can support artists as well as giving ukuleles away. And
beautiful.
Yeah, and so then we've got this project. Can I lead into the...
We'll check in with Elizabeth first and see what about you for opportunities and milestones. We'll go on to the heartwarming bit in a wee second. But Elizabeth, what opportunities did you find sprung from your ukulele obsession?
It was amazing. I started out just, you know, perform, and I still do that. But the social aspect of, you know, giving people a good time and being together in the group was part of it, but it's obviously not the one thing that was groundbreaking for me personally, because it was just a great chance to address my classical guitarist traumas in every way, and especially in being on stage and making it work to an extent, as it's not important whether I feel I've succeeded in playing every note. That's not what it's about, you know.
I'm so sorry to interrupt you. Can I just ask you to unpack that a wee bit? Did you say to address your classical guitar traumas? I think you and Tara are talking about the same thing. Is like this idea that music has to be sort of, that there's only one way to do it, and if you're not right, you're wrong. You know, it's a very black and white kind of scenario. Where actually, that's one of the main things that I wanted to draw out with this series of interviews, is to put people's mind at ease and say, look, it's not about, you know, if people wanted to hear music note for note perfect, they would listen to a CD or a record. But people go to live gigs because there's something more. There's something more to be had. So do you want to maybe speak a little bit more on that?
Yeah, I mean, also my teaching is exactly about that, about finding a positive way with oneself and letting go of preconceptions that are not helpful. I mean, most preconceptions, I think, are not helpful. That can... you have to have your hand like this or like this. That's not what it's about. And the whole, for me, is not, it's the whole life thing. It's something you're completely unprepared for as a classical guitarist. Absolutely. And seeing other performers and seeing them go about their craft, which is performing. You know, the playing is one part of it, but it's more the performance side of it, how you can look at it and how you can dissect that as an art form and as an act. was for me the most interesting thing in the beginning. And in, you know, my act is quite close to how I am, kind of, but it's still an act, and that was, there was a lot of freedom in that revelation, I'd say.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I actually feel like every time I get on stage, I'm like massaging a trauma away, you know, like I'm actually creating a vent for this insecurity to fly, you know, to leave my body. And there's times I get on stage and there's, you know, there's nothing that goes the way I had hoped, particularly if I use a loop pedal. So for anybody who's thinking of toying with pedals, there's a big difference between how capable you are in your own bedroom and how capable you are when you take that pedal on stage. But that should never scare you out of trying it. You know, every time I get on stage, I learn something new. But the one thing I insist upon maintaining is that I don't take shame home with me. I don't burden myself with how much better that should have went or how people will view that performance, because it's the same as any other kind of experience or news or whatever. You know, it's old news by the time it's done. You know, people will remember exceptional performances, but you have to put in your hours if you're going to be that memorable. And otherwise, people will forget very quickly any of the mistakes that they heard. And as a performer taken to the stage for the first time or whatever, you assume that everyone has heard all of your mistakes, when actually no one knew what you were going to play. So no one knows where the mistakes were. And so I love that you said that. I totally resonate with that for sure.
Also, I think the ukulele world provides a unique opportunity to do that, to be on an open stage and to be in surrounded by people. You're surrounded by people who are generally very supportive, and the act of going on stage and overcoming that fear is celebrated in a way that I have not seen in other areas of music, really.
You feel like it's like talking, it's like performing to friends now, though.
And for me, it really was, I could take that part and take it on other stages. I'm still predominantly in the youth world, but still, if I feel there's a difference, you know, I can now pretend everybody's my friend, because I've learned what it feels like. It's true.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with that. So I was telling the ladies just before we logged on here that I was having a bit of tech trouble, and that this was in fact my fourth lockdown laptop. The reason this one is going back to the shop is because the webcam is notoriously unpredictable and unreliable. So that's pretty unfortunate, but but you guys can still hear me, so that's fine. I might actually just try and join the conversation through my phone. But in the meantime, ladies, can we move on to the heartwarming stories, even the funny stories? Tara, first I wanted to ask you about your mammoth charity single undertaking, your huge lockdown project. Do you want to tell everyone a bit about that?
Yes, so thank you. So at the beginning of lockdown, we were meant to have another mass busk in June, and we obviously weren't able to do that. And I had this idea. We'd seen lots of lockdown choir videos, but we, you know, hadn't seen so many ukulele ones. And I ran the idea past Elizabeth, and my husband is a sound engineer, and obviously his whole world has been totally turned upside down because he is unable to do his job on Zoom, unlike myself. So it was partly to carry on with my aim of bringing people together, but to also keep him busy and stop him from going stir crazy. So I invited quite a few. We've got 25 ukulele artists, so Elizabeth and you know, the usual suspects, Phil Dolman, Andy Eastwood, but we've got some friends from the US. We've got Katie Vernon, PT Max on it. We've got Daniel Ward and Heidi Sweetberg. We've also got Charlotta from the Badmouth Orchestra. Ukulele Simon, Mark Gallagher. But also what was exciting for me was that we've got this, there's this amazing girl called Alex Carroll who is local to me, and I saw her playing at the farmer's market. And thought, you know, wow, she's great. And then when she got her ukulele out, can you imagine how excited I was? It's like, whoa! So she is on it also. She's only 15, and I'm excited to share her with the ukulele world.
She's amazing, yeah.
She's so cool. And so then the idea was we start with this sort of very moving, the track is With a Little Help from My Friends. And the idea is, you know, we start with this very moving, sort of lovely, vulnerable voice. And then by the end, it's lots and lots of ukulele players. So we then invited ukulele players to come and join us on the final chorus. And I'm really excited because we have over 100 players on the track now. And we've had people from Germany, from Ireland, from up and down the UK, from the US. And it was just so lovely when they sent in their videos. Also, it was just so seeing people at the end, you know, do a little fist pump or I did it. And this sort of sense of achievement, even if, it, you know, it was like minutes, not, it was like 3 minutes, but for them, I hope that they really felt like they were part of something bigger. And, it was also important to me that we kept it very real. So it's quite raw. The recording is, you know, 90% of it is people recording on their telephones. We haven't flown in any special tech or, you know, as nice as that would have been, we haven't got that within our budget. So it's, you know, there's no cheating. It is, everybody is at home during lockdown. And it's just, I just can't wait for you guys to hear it and to see the video. And it's just, we've been very time consuming. So we waited for everybody to send in their entries. And then when we were so close to 100, I just had to wait to get to that 100 mark. And then we've got an amazing drummers put a track down. And then we had, so excited, we've got Sam Brown is on the track and she's recorded some amazing ukulele parts, but also some bass. And we already had the amazing Caroline from the Hedge Inspectors had done a bass line too, so we're just, it's just
amazing.
It's properly rocking. And and I think it's quite an unusual choice in a way for a ukulele. It definitely doesn't sort of sound like your normal ukulele band.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And there are some really, yeah, I hope that you'll agree, there were some really moving parts. But yeah, so Matt had 138 tracks in the end. So he was quite busy. And then there I was thinking, you know, talking about tech, I was thinking, so I started doing the video and I got, I know, like 10 videos in my computer just said, no way, love, this is not happening. So we have a really great guy doing the video, but it's taking a while. So
yeah, with 136 tracks, I'm better than this.
So, we're also, you know, I really wanted, you know, I'm ticking all the boxes. So I'm in daily chats trying to get hold of Sony. And no, I mean, it's been, you know, we're making sure that we're doing it properly. So that,
yeah, I kind of joke sometimes, I say, about coordinating artists is like trying to herd cats.
Yeah. Well, that was really fun. What I love is that we have all, you know, we've fulfilled the mission of bringing people together. But the most important thing is the track is raising money. So we've got, it's going to be available to download on all the usual suspects, iTunes, Amazon, Spotify. Although we would be grateful if you did download it rather than stream it, because we actually make money from downloads. You have to stream it, I think, 20 times or something to get the equivalent of one download. And it will go on YouTube, and we've got some merch and things you can buy, so little souvenirs and stuff. But the most important thing is that 50% is going to the NHS Charities Together, who have obviously been amazing during COVID. And then the other bit, which was most important to me, is we're giving 48% to help musicians. And they don't only support musicians, but they support the whole live music events as a whole.
Sure, yeah, they're pretty integral in the industry, aren't they, really?
Yeah, so they're supporting sound engineers and lighting engineers and all these, and we feel like sort of forgotten people because, like I said, they can't come and they can't move what they're doing online. So, so we want to support them, and then 2% will come to us. So I've already got a list of music therapy trusts within hospitals that are wanting to leave. So hopefully if it's a success, then I can fulfill that. Glalies to not only help patients on the ward, but also doctors and staff that also use the ukulele, use music, give them a respite from what's been a pretty awful 3 months.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. And it's funny that you mentioned that, actually, because I had a music session earlier. I work with a group of Syrian women, and we started a ukulele project just before lockdown, which was about, we got some ukulele kits and we were going to build the kits and then we were going to learn how to play them. And then with lockdown, that all stopped. And I was doing my mad things all over the Facebook and doing the live streams, which is completely out of my comfort zone, as you can see me juggling my tech with I would like to say the greatest of ease, but not quite. But actually what we did was we got the ladies all set up on Zoom, and we went ahead with the kit making workshops, and they have all now successfully built their own ukuleles.
That's amazing.
And so, it is amazing. I can't quite believe it myself. I'm so impressed. But now we're actually learning the music, and we're looking at things that are very accessible, so we started out with one of the songs is Baby Shark, because there's only 2 chords in that, which is really easy, and actually a lot of the ladies have young children, so that was handy. And then just by coincidence today, I decided to go on and choose another song that we would look at. And it was Three Little Birds, the Bob Marley one. Who plays ukulele and doesn't know Three Little Birds? Victor, I'm looking at you. And actually, I wasn't ready for what happened next. And one of the ladies in the group, now it wasn't one of the Syrian women, it was another facilitator, mentioned that her father, who is now deceased, used to play that song on her guitar. And so for the next 5 minutes, we all got very emotional as we stumbled our way through this song. And when I got off the Zoom call, it just really, reminded me, reinforced for me the importance of music in feeling connected and in connecting each other, because I'm sure I don't need to tell you ladies that it's very easy to feel disconnected, and it's very easy to doubt, should I be doing more serious work, or should I be doing, but actually when you have those experiences where you move someone to tears and it moves you to tears, in your heart exactly why you're doing the work you do.
Yeah,
beautiful. So I can't wait to see this charity single. We'll be keeping an eye, we'll make sure and share it as soon as it's launched. But in the meantime, people can go check out the London Ukulele project. I was actually on there looking at your merch, and I was a little bit disappointed to find you're out of t-shirts.
Oh no!
I'm a big t-shirt fiend.
I will have to sort that out. I'm sorry about that.
Letting you know. Okay, cool. We actually have a question here for Elizabeth, and it's from Donal. Do you find that a ukulele gig tends to attract lots of players, and that leads to a sense of community that there mightn't be in classical guitar gig?
It's different in different countries. I think the ukulele groups are much bigger in Britain. all over, really. And they're just starting out in Austria and Germany. I mean, we have one group in Vienna, and we have one group where I live in rural Bavaria. And it's just people get together, but it's usually separate from the concert. Here also, depending on the venue, obviously, you find other people as well, depending also what kind of music you do. Sorry, what was the second part of the question?
I think what Donna was saying was most people who go to a ukulele gig play ukulele. And do you think that's what helps develop the community aspect?
There's definitely a similarity in that lots of guitarists go to guitar gigs. I mean, and we're talking
for
about
sure, yeah.
10, 15 years back when I went to my last one. But there's a different sense about it. I mean, in the ukulele world, people are impressed when you play fast, but it's not the most important thing. And it's a nice thing to have, you know. You can see impressive players, but then again, the thing itself, the ukulele itself, seems to be more important, which I don't know if it's good or bad, but it has the consequence of bringing all kinds of styles together, which I found really interesting, especially in festivals like Gnarf or Prague, which was my first festival. Just a vast diversity in players and performers. And that is the thing that is completely different from the guitar world, because you have the classic machine and the fingers. I don't even want to talk about it because I don't know all the scenes. You only know the one you're born into.
And I suppose that kind of makes sense with what Tara was saying as well, actually, about, you know, drawing in people who are otherwise isolated. So you've got these satellites, you know, these individual musicians who aren't quite sure where they fit in. And if it was in a traditional music context, you know, like you say, they would have to find the one they're born into as such. But with the ukulele, you know, one minute Elizabeth, you'll be on stage and the next person up will be doing some crazy mad beatboxing with loop pedals and whatever. Or actually, as it was in Gnarf, I was on before Elizabeth. And that was one of my very first performances. And when I got off stage and saw Elizabeth come on after me, I'm not going to lie, I almost had a heart failure. We were actually having a laugh. Tara, Elizabeth and I are in a row of three artists in the Gnarf brochure. What do you call those? Program? For that year, so it's quite ironic that we're the three of us here together this evening, so delighted. I'm just keeping a wee eye on the time here, and I just think maybe we'll move on to the next question, which was really around sort of funny stories. I think, Elizabeth, you had one. Tara, you definitely had one.
Do you want me to go first?
Yeah, would you?
Yeah, but I mean, the recent funny story, it happened this year in Finland, and I played on the Sunday, I played a very new piece, very experimental, with a slide. There's a video of it if you want to check it out. It has very little to do with general ukulele music, and it's very, you know, you can think it sounds ugly, but it's quite nice, I think. But it's definitely something completely different. And so I was very nervous. It was the world premiere. The composer wanted to hear it, you know, all that. And you never know how these things go down. And this very lovely artist who was also in the concert, she, you know, tended me up and wanted to, you know, have a conversation before the concert. And I was very nervous, and I had a hard time being responsive, really. I really didn't want to be unfriendly, but I kind of couldn't really answer. And so after a while, I was like, I'm really sorry, I'm just very nervous. And she looked at me like, oh, you'll be fine. Just play from your heart. And I imagined me playing this really weird piece from my heart. And yeah, she after she had heard the piece, she didn't really. She was kind of, you know, she didn't really approach me anymore. She was friendly still, but she was completely irritated in a way. Yeah.
I have heard this piece. It's unbelievable. So you should check out the YouTube video.
I'm sorry you couldn't hear me. I was laughing there, but I was also muted. the beauty of Zoom, huh? With the awkward silences. Yeah, I love that. Play From Your Heart is something that I was told a lot when I returned to music as an adult. And it is definitely much easier said than done if you have gone through that sort of academic training as such. Because it's almost like they're complementary components to learning the music.
Your training also gives you all those tools that you can actually use to play what is in your heart, you know?
Yeah,
for sure. Yeah, it's like two sides of the same coin. You know, you can be so free that it's totally avant-garde and no one even knows how to listen to what it is you're doing.
And definitely,
or you can be... Pardon?
That's definitely that piece.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, I'd love to hear it. Definitely link it below. And Tara, you had a bit of a barmy incident with the ukulele as well, didn't you?
Yeah, so I was talking about how my very lovely husband gave me a ukulele for our first wedding anniversary. And then I had a baby and my brain goes to mush.
Yeah.
And I was still teaching people, you know, I love my students, but they wouldn't let me have a break. They were like, no, bring the baby. Come on, bring the baby with you. So I think my son was 6 weeks old. It was all chaos, as you can imagine. And my husband, you know, Matt very kindly said, oh, I'll give you a lift. I'll drive you there. You know, I didn't think he was working. He said, I'll drive you there. And I got, you know, you've got so much kit when they're tiny, like with all the bottles and all the stuff that babies come with. Anyway, so I had that, my ukulele and my music. And I put it all down and I remembered that I'd forgotten my wallet or something. So I ran back in. Louis, my son, was in the car seat and Matt thought, oh, well, I'll be really organised and sort of pull out of the car park so that we're ready to leave when she comes back. And I came out of my flat to find him running over my ukulele. And there was a lot of, you know, shouting, stop, stop. And he was absolutely, you know, just furious with me that I'd put it on the ground, furious with himself, you know, all sorts of emotions. And there was some swearing and there was some shouting. And we hadn't long moved into our flat and the neighbour came out onto his balcony and he was like, you ain't hit my car, have you? And I just suddenly, I mean, I'm quite, as you can stand, I'm quite posh at the best of times, but I literally got like hyacinth bouquet from that programme. I was like, he's run over my ukulele. This guy was like, you're what? And I was like, my ukulele. And he was just like, who is this crazy lady? And I ended up having to say, he ran over my handbag. Your car's fine, mate. My ukulele, unfortunately, was not. And I still just, I'm all was left was the headstock.
Oh,
yeah, it's a funny story, but also reduces me to tears every time I say it.
You still have the headstock, though?
I still have the headstock, yes.
Please.
And then quickly, promptly went and got a hard case. If should it ever happen again, there is a lesson. A, don't go back to work 6 weeks after having a baby. B, don't put your ukulele on the ground. It's not advisable.
Yeah, it is absolutely fascinating what happens to your brain after having a baby. I actually performed at Ganoff that time and had my little one with me, and I think he was only six or 8 weeks old.
How did you do that?
I have no idea.
I was going around that Ganoff going, you know, I've left my baby, and they were like, you know, I've left my baby for the first time. And everyone was like, oh, is he tiny, tiny wee? I was like, he's two. They're like, why, what? You feel like a limb has been, yeah.
You absolutely do. I'm a yoga and meditation teacher, among other things. I'm a qualified yoga therapist and sound therapist, and it's something I'm just really fascinated by through my own life experience as such. And why am I telling you that? Oh, because I was explaining to a friend one time, you know, people would periodically check in with you throughout your pregnancy and then afterwards as well. Yeah. And people were asking me, you know, how are you now? And I was saying, when I was pregnant, I would describe it as, you know, I feel like I'm a lodger in my own body, like someone else lives here now and they're letting me kip on the couch.
Yeah.
And then after I had the baby, you know, they're like, well, why are you now? And I kind of described it as, I'm back. I've moved back in. I'm definitely in here and I'm definitely the only one in here. But actually, my consciousness has completely left. My consciousness is following around this little independent imp that's running amok at the minute. And it is. It's just totally bizarre. Like, you just couldn't believe or appreciate when other people describe it to you until you go through it yourself. It's just complete.
I have loved in lockdown these, you know, the classic. I think wasn't there that amazing video a couple of years ago of the politician at home and his daughter ran in and the wife sort of quickly, and I don't know if you've seen in the last couple of days, they've had, you know, very senior sort of female scientists and doctors talking about the pandemic, and then their daughter's come in and gone, "Mummy, can I have another biscuit?" And it's just like, I just think it's amazing. This juggle that has been happening the last.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if we're talking about ukuleles and babies, I actually find that my opportunity to play Afghanov, like that deadline, and that opportunity, that platform, I absolutely love the idea that it would be our first family festival together. You know, I love that he's going to grow up in the ukulele scene, you know, that he's going to know that kind of community before he's even old enough to appreciate what that is. But actually for me, in a postpartum state, to have that deadline and to have that opportunity, it actually gave me, it gave me focus, and two, it gave me, it was kind of like my golden ticket to be able to say to my husband, I really need some time. I've got to practice. Can you just go? you're on duty now. Like, I've got this thing. Like, you know, it's really important. And so I will be forever grateful for that opportunity, because I believe that that was a massive sort of support to me at a time when, you know, particularly we talk about isolation. You know, young mothers face such isolation, particularly in the first 6 months. So the ukulele for me was an absolute lifeline. And then the community beyond that, that I didn't even know existed, you know, 6 months prior. It was an absolute gift to me when I really didn't know myself at all.
Yeah, it's amazing. I have a photo of Louis. His first gig was a ukulele gig in Bournemouth. And I've got a picture of him with Phil Dolman. And I think Tricity Vogue's tiny... a tiny ukulele, and yeah, I have to say she's on the track as well. I just feel so lucky that I've got made all these amazing friends, and I have to tell you, Elizabeth is a very, very good storyteller, and just lovely memories of her playing Row Row Your Boat with Louis when he was only a baby, and I just, yeah, it's very special. So I think it's special for our babies to.
Absolutely.
It's lovely.
Absolutely. It is. It's so special.
I definitely loved reading him that dinosaur story.
You were amazing.
In my highlights.
Yeah, we can book you in for some online storytelling, yeah, for right. Sure. Yeah. Ladies, I'm very conscious of the time and I don't want to keep you guys too late, but I just want to very quickly ask both of you for a piece of advice that you would give to anyone who is playing ukulele and interested in developing themselves further. And then Elizabeth's going to play us out as we finish this evening. So, maybe Tara, you want to go first? So best piece of advice you'd give to anyone learning ukulele?
I think just be patient and kind to yourself. Like, it doesn't happen overnight. The amount of people that say to me, oh, I can't do the strumming and I can't sing at the same time. And just, yeah, deep breaths and little steps, small steps. I mean, I think, you know, everything about life is small steps, isn't it? And just
totally. You never know how far you've come.
Yeah, like Elizabeth was saying earlier, it's about the experience and you don't need to be playing every single note perfectly.
Yeah.
Just enjoy it and have fun.
Absolutely. Beautiful. Thank you so much. Elizabeth, yourself, any last minute advice?
Take my practicing workshop. be interested in how it sounds and go look for a enjoyable feeling while you play, both physically and mentally and with everything, really.
Beautiful. Okay, perfect. Thank you. Elizabeth, just tell everybody where they can find out more about your workshops and your books as well. You're a self-published author of 3 method ukulele books.
And the new one, pieces collection, basically, fingerstyle attitudes, the 30 pieces for ukulele. So they're all on Amazon, Kindle, and books. But in my shop on my website, elizabethpfeiffer.de, you'll find the PDFs of all those books, and you'll find the PDFs. And in that shop, there's also lessons and workshops. Most workshops have been in German, but if there's interest, I'm more than happy to teach in English, but let me know about it. And so there's all kinds of stuff there.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Well, without any further ado, I look forward to hearing what you're going to play for us.
What am I going to play? The first one I played earlier. I'm going to play the charity single, kind of, with a little help from my friends and my relative families, holding it together all evening.
That was about an hour, believe it or not. Ladies, thank you so much for your time this evening and for your openness to conversation that goes beyond chords and melody. It's really a joy for me to be able to share with other people that there's loads of great work being done with the ukulele and we've barely just scratched the surface. So thank you so much for being brave enough to step up first for interview and also for sharing just some of the wonderful work that you're doing, because it is as unique as you are, and it was a delight to hear more about it. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
If you enjoyed this podcast, why not check out the rest of our content on Facebook and on Instagram? You can find us searching Ukulele Portal.